Welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast, where we are practicing the art of kindness and civil discourse and authenticity and storytelling. Our goal is to foster a healthy dialogue about race relations in our community. We seek common ground for common good and hope these conversations encourage you to build authentic relationships outside of your race or comfort zone. This season of the podcast is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund. Thanks for tuning in and welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. This is our second to last podcast recording, folks. It's about to wrap up. I cannot believe it, but we're going to end it with a bang.
Yes, we are. And we are nearly done, like Cubitt said, but we're looking forward to a great conversation with the Dr. Quentin Hughes of Northeast OKC Renaissance, Inc., among a lot of other things, which we will get into today. And so, Quentin, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, man, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me.
So we'd love to kind of just start with a little bit of background. Where are you from? You from the city? You from Oklahoma? Where? A little bit of background, where you grew up, family. Let's start there.
Yeah, man, I was actually born and raised in Little Rock, Arkansas. Yeah, and so since I'm an 80s baby, I came up during the time when the infamous documentary Banging in Little Rock was maybe at the height of its popularity, or at least, you know, it was, well, I should say Little Rock was maybe kind of at the height of, you know, kind of drug trafficking and, you know,
and gang banging
for yep. real. So, but yeah, I was, in a single parent home. You know, my parents were divorced, at a young age. And so I spent a lot of time in Boys and Girls Club system. You know, they were close to my school, so I would always kind of walk over there with a group of friends. And so we spent a lot of time there and had a lot of great influences in that environment. Was also a church kid, so also had a friend group at church that really anchored me. So, and also a lot of great men that were influences there as well. But yeah, man. So that my Boys Club experience presented opportunities for volunteerism, and I ultimately was awarded a scholarship for volunteerism from Boys and Girls Club, and that enabled me to come to Oklahoma to go to school here.
So you mean it was, you like, just didn't just pick Oklahoma? You had to be lured here.
You know what? I would have picked U of A. You know what I'm saying? I'm a Razorback okay, for real. You know, first, but you know that actually University of Oklahoma made me feel way more at home and welcome at the time. They were investing a lot in minority engineering students and, you know, recruited me on over.
Let's go.
Yeah.
That's good. So you wear a lot of hats, doctor. I always like doc, you know, Quentin, the Quentin. Father, husband, Northeast Oklahoma City Renaissance founder, Kindred Spirits, the Innovation District, Maps for Advisory Board, like you said, PhD from OU. I don't even know where to start. Where would you like to start talking about any of these hats? And we can just dive in from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest hat that I wear and I'm fortunate to wear now is really program director for Northeast OKC Renaissance, Inc. Mm-hmm. And I'd say much of the work that I've kind of done my whole life has led to this opportunity, right, to kind of put it all together and really full time, you know, focus on what it looks like to, you know, revitalize a community from within. So yeah, you know, when I was at OU, I had opportunities to go visit different cities for conferences and things of that nature, and you know, also go back home, and you know, there was also times when we would come up to the city. And so all of these places, we kind of noticed similarities between, you know, we were seeing communities that were being invested in, you know, and you could tell that the folks that were you know, now enjoying those benefits probably weren't the folks that, you know, that lived there prior to then, right? And, you know, I started to develop then, like, a hypothesis around what it might look like to see investment, reinvestment, revitalization in the community. But the people who benefit and remain were the people who were there in the first place. You know what I'm saying? And so that I took the long way to this work, you know what I'm saying, from really that place. So I studied, you know, what, how, you know, people of color were able to be successful in the College of Engineering. And it really brought me to the research that that steered my work. So
to help kind of when you say revitalize, that tells me that there was a once was in the area of Northeast Oklahoma City. And can you, from your research, can you kind of give us an idea what once was in Northeast Oklahoma City and why the term revitalization is used and necessary?
Yeah, definitely for Northeast Oklahoma City. And as not to say that this is an isolated thing where Northeast Oklahoma City is the only place this happened, but you know, there was a time that black people were only able to live, work, and play in a small geographic area, south of 10th and east of Broadway. And so, you know, while that was a limiting proposition, it also created great opportunity for a lot of the people who lived there to, address all of the needs that the community had, from a business standpoint, from a healthcare standpoint, from, you know, an amenity standpoint. And so it was a self-sustainable community that was vibrant. You know, there was rich culture that came from here. There was music. There were, leaders. There were, you know, powerful families that built communities, built hospitals, built hotels. You know what I'm saying? And this is just, you know, what we learned from historically. It's not something that I've ever seen, obviously.
Right.
however, it's what you understand to be the case in communities like this near the urban core, like kind of across the nation. And so when the federal government decided they wanted to create an interstate highway system that would connect suburbs and cities, they also decided that highways were going to run through communities like Northeast Oklahoma City and displace, you know, millions of people. In the case of Northeast Oklahoma City, thousands. And so you really saw that be kind of the beginning of the end of that type of
What highway would that be?
I-235.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, people were displaced, and that had, you know, an impact, you know, economically, socially, almost in every way. And that coincided with desegregation. Families that had means and no longer had access to the type of quality of life that they once had sought it elsewhere, right? And the folks that couldn't move ended up being the most vulnerable. Over time, we, you know, as a result of that, there was decades of deterioration and blight, disinvestment, which I think created the conditions that we wanted to be a part, a solution for.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for that context from somebody that grew up in Northeast Oklahoma City and watched some of what you're talking about, and to actually drive through with my parents and my grandparents to see, you know, for them to point out this was and that was and I used to here and I used to there, and to be sitting there to go, what happened to it? For until I became well into adulthood, not understand what happened to it. Mm. In fact, I was probably
led to believe that we did it. That when I say we did it, is that they closed down the store.
Right.
They left it.
Right.
They didn't keep the property up. You know, they were, the term was trifling, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. And so for you to give that context for people to understand is really important.
Yeah.
That they didn't do it.
Yeah. No, it's you know, when you're in it, it's hard to see the bigger picture. You know what I'm saying? And so the more you learn about the same thing happening in other communities, you really start to see, where systemic, policies, racist policies had tremendous impact throughout the nation. Right.
And I think what we're talking about at the core is opportunity, and where that has been cut off or invested in certain other parts of the city. And so that is something that I would love to kind of get your thoughts on, of kind of you are in this space of creating opportunities. Mm-hmm. I know you and I kind of ran into each other in kind of the education mm-hmm. realm, right? You, mm-hmm. you've worked for many years investing in young people, mm-hmm. helping them take their next steps, helping them evaluate where they're at and in kind of navigating or crafting a future. Mm-hmm. And so you've thought for many years about this idea of opportunity, and you've got to move into a few different spaces. And so I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts about what you're excited about that you're working on that is unlocking opportunity yep. for more people, not just young people. I mean, you literally kind of have your hand in kind of every different stage of life, right?
Too much.
You're everywhere. And so I would love to kind of hear your thoughts or kind of your ideology on kind of this idea of creating opportunity for more people.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned our time, you know, in education, and, you know, because that's where I went immediately after college, because, you know, I recognized, hey, some of the reasons why people aren't as successful in, in college is because they aren't as academically prepared prior to getting there. And so then you go there and you try to address issues and you realize, yeah, well, there are reasons why they're, you know, they weren't able to get, you know, prepared beforehand. And not all of those reasons can be addressed by instruction or even by counseling, right? To get to the root. And so, you know, it was during that time that I recognized, like, I want to make impact outside of this, right? Mm-hmm. And also I'd say when I worked in middle and high schools, a lot of what we did was promote, you know, post-secondary education. A lot of time it was college, and all of our kids, they all were going to go D1, right, Tito? Yeah. They all were going to go D1, but they were all going to go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? And it was like that when I was in high school as well. It was like, you know, I'm obviously in Oklahoma and I didn't stay there. And, you know, I think it wasn't until later that I realized that that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, people want to go elsewhere because they don't see a future for themselves here. Right. And so when we talk about creating opportunity, it is creating a place for them, you know, a space for them to be able to have the type of quality of life that they think that they would get elsewhere, right? A way to, you know, really retain, you know, cultivate and retain the talent that we have here in Oklahoma City. And I think to do that, you know, you have to create, we got to revive the culture that I never saw, that you learned about from your, you know, from your grandparents or your parents or whatnot. We have to, you know, how do we get back to that sustainable, that ecosystem that was present in Deep Dudes before, right? If I own the hotel and if I own the hospital, then I have jobs for the people that are here, right? You know, jobs that can provide a good quality of life. You know what I'm saying? If I own the juke joint, if I own, the newspaper, right? If all of my, you know, if I keep those teachers, if I keep those people that want to be educators, you know what I mean? If, you know, if we are empowered to run the schools or, you know, to educate our children, you know what, maybe it encourages people to stay, or it keeps them, it tethers them to the space more than it did before. And so, you know, much of what we're doing is that. And so, and a lot of it was, is centered on, it starts with real estate. It starts with the land, because, you know, as the Oklahoma City Renaissance has unfolded and we've seen, you know, Oklahoma City has been a nationwide success story for investing in itself, that, you know, now we're seeing downtown expansion and you're seeing, you know, speculation happen east of I-235 now, right? And so what you got are, you know, still who remain after those decades of blight and deterioration are, you know, those most vulnerable. You know, you got absentee homeowners or landlords. You have, you know, you don't have as much wealth here, as much, you know, of a tax base or, you know, political power or any of those things. And so, you know, you're vulnerable for, you know, that speculation to come in and to create, basically, for people to be displaced, right? And for people not, to lose the opportunity to have what once was, right? But instead, it be replaced with what we see in Deep Deuce now, right? So, you know, what Northeast Renaissance has heavily focused on is like building capacity, but like for folks that can develop, like help to redevelop land, you know, and even do some of that of our own. And then, you know, to build on that business, you know what I'm saying? How, what does it look like to support founders that are also interested in building up this community or the city, right? That have a commitment to excellence in that way. And, you know, what does it look like to support neighborhoods? You know what I'm saying? And build capacity there, leadership there, you know, social entrepreneurship, nonprofit, you know. So Northeast Renaissance is now, I believe, evolved into a place where we have a chance to support and cultivate all of that. And within that, provide opportunity in all of those segments from whether that be business creation or job creation or home ownership, right?
Yeah. So that's a great segue to what we wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about, some of the programs, Peacekeepers, OMFA, and some of the other things that happens through the Oklahoma City Renaissance, Northeast Oklahoma City Renaissance.
Yeah. So Placekeepers, I noticed that you all, that this podcast was supported by the Black Justice Fund.
Yes.
Shout out to Black Justice Fund. Their support.
Wait a minute, you're reading the fine print? Like, only your PhD does that stuff, man. Like, what are you doing?
It's like, I raised the eyebrow, you know, right. Like, shout out. Yes,
right, right.
Yeah, without the Black Justice Fund, the Placekeepers program would not be able to be where it is today. But yeah, Placekeepers is a real estate development training program that targets you know, community members and stakeholders, and really provides you know, foundational education around real estate development, also connection to mentorship and access to capital. And so we've completed 5 cohorts, and it's actually grown to do more than the training. There is now we now have like an exchange kind of program where we visit other cities, and other cities might come here so we can learn more about like their approach to community development. And a conference. We do an annual conference where we can attract, you know, kind of thought leaders from other communities. And lastly, a capstone program that we're looking to launch this year, where, you know, those Placekeepers who might not have been able to move right into construction after the class, where they can really kind of get some experience as partners on a project with Northeast Renaissance.
And tell me, tell our listeners why this is important.
Yeah.
Like why do you need to offer this to people in the neighborhood or in the community?
Yeah. So we go back to the vulnerability of folks that are here. So, you know, I mentioned the folks that remain, maybe, you know, were had less wealth and are less connected to, you know, power and influence, right? And then you got people who may have grown up or had a connection but live, you know, further away, that, you know, maybe live in the suburbs or whatnot, but have an interest, you know, or paying attention. You know what I'm saying? And so anyway, with that expansion of downtown, it really creates it really has created you know, kind of a danger, for lack of better words, that I can think of, for the, you know, for this community to be displaced, right? For people in this community displaced, for land ownership to change hands. You know, people would say gentrification, and it's easy to recognize. But I don't want to give gentrification too much negative energy. It's really the displacement. I think the gentrification, if we were to recreate Deep Deuce, we would actually be gentrifying, right? Because we would be reintroducing wealth. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that gentrification is the devil. You know what I'm saying? It's the displacement.
The moving people out.
It's the displacement. And so the capacity building piece for the people who exist here, or for the people who have a heart for the community, who have the means to come back to be, you know, investors or to be residents again. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's the rationale behind Placekeepers. It's around, you know, teaching people who are here how to do real estate development, so they're positioned to buy the land, you know what I'm saying, and build from within. Yeah. But to do it with a lens, you know, with a similar lens of that is, you know, in an approach that is not extractive. Right. But that is additive.
And one thing that I love, and I know you guys do some home ownership stuff as well.
Yes.
Is the thing that comes to mind is kind of this idea of institutional knowledge or generational knowledge. Mm-hmm. That as I think back in my story, maybe I'll ask the listeners to kind of reflect on home ownership, right? Mm-hmm. We might not think about it often, but now that I think about it, it's like, okay, well, my parents owned a home, right? Well, okay, my grandparents owned a home. And so there's kind of this generational knowledge that buying a home is like, just in and of itself, stressful, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. This is a big purchase, right? Mm-hmm. All the things. And because of my history, I had people that I could turn to, mm-hmm. and ask questions, right? There's a lot of paperwork and all this stuff, right? And then so you kind of start thinking about these networks of where this knowledge lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that networks of knowledge around home ownership have been with people who have owned homes, right? Who Absolutely. Haven't been historically kind of locked out from opportunities to own. And so even my story about my first home, in my only home, is that my college roommate was in real estate. Mm. I was his first home that he sold as a real estate agent. And his wife had been in the business, and so she had some knowledge there. You know, I could lean to my parents to say, okay, is this wise, all of these things? And so then the question is, if you haven't had a family who has owned things or owned homes, where do you go for that information, right? I'm not trying to just trust some dude off YouTube, you know, which I will learn and do things. There are some good content. But when you have a trusted organization or person like what you are providing to a community, I think you guys are reintroducing some of that institutional or historical knowledge of how to do those things. And so when I see the work that you guys are doing, those are the things that come to mind. Of I can think of several people that I've talked to, you know, behind your back, who said, man, this has been really cool. Like, I didn't know this, or I didn't have access to this. You know, one of our good friends, Derek Sire, who has been on the pod, he talks about this openly, but he's one of the first ones in his family to own a home. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he's having to do this process alone, or having to find other people. And what I see with the resources you are providing is you can be that person or that organization that people can come to and trust that they're not, you know, being led astray, or this is a bad deal, or what, you know, all the things.
So I'd say, yes, we have now started to do a home buyer program, as you mentioned. And it's really in partnership with neighborhood housing. Right. And so these, you know, home ownership education classes have been around, but there's like not necessarily been this consumption by, you know, by our community for a number of reasons. And so, so part of what we wanted to do is partner in a way that that attract, you know, maybe attracts more participation, but also adds that layer, that lens, that placekeeping lens, right? But to your point, I think when we talk about capacity building, it's in part about growing the number of people who have that knowledge that can also share that knowledge. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
And you talk about the generational piece. I think, you know, obviously, like, the long-term goal is, you know, for that kind of to continue to turn over, for, like, people to pay it forward, right? I think that's part of what we're positioned to do. Mm. You know, I can't say enough, like, we really intend to be a catalyst, right? And so it's not that we want to own all of the things, and people may be confused about that because we got, like, this umbrella thing going on. We really want to get the party started. You know what I'm saying? We're willing to take the risk and pilot something. And then once, if there is a founder or somebody else that comes along, like, hey, I really want to do this. You know, I want to invest my time, energy, effort, passion, all of that into is like, hey, we'll show you everything we know. You know what I'm saying? Open source, we'll support, we'll incubate you for some time and then run with it. We want to make sure you like we aligned, you know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
But from there, you know, go for it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, you talk about that, man. Like, my grandfather owned his home. And my mother didn't end up buying a home until I was in high school, you know, so I did have that benefit of her doing that. But you got probably so many families that are, you know, that don't have that.
When you come from it, like for me, it was never a thought not to eventually buy a home. It was just not an option. And the reason, looking back, the reason it wasn't an option is because grandma owned one. My daddy owned one, you know, that's just, you just do that. You don't rent, you know, we just didn't do that. But becoming knowledge and start serving in the community, like, that is not the natural order of things for a lot of people, right? Generationally, they just do these other things.
So you think about it though, and there are a lot of people, like I talked about, like, vulnerable folks that mm-hmm. were left behind, are like more likely to use government assistance, you know what I'm saying? More likely to be on Section 8, right? And so while these programs, I think, could be good, maybe incubators,
mm-hmm.
If they're not just temporary, then they really suppress, you know, or, you know, they don't allow that person to become a homeowner because, I shouldn't say it on a, they discourage, you know, the folks that are using them from becoming homeowners because, you know, once you go and increase your income, you know, you're losing benefits. You know, there's this thing called benefits cliff that, you know, people have been talking about. And that's like a thing. It's like the minute I make $35,001, you know what I'm saying?
Now
I'm losing
in the gap.
Sooner care. I'm losing, you know what I'm saying?
Now like, you're in that gap of no concern.
Yeah, right? Like, I lost money by making more money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so that's discouraging for me, you know, unless I'm making a leap from 35 to 60.
Yes.
I'm going to stay where I'm at. It's like, yo, man, I don't want a promotion.
Right.
Like, promoting me is, you know.
Yeah, it literally puts people in this gap where there's no help for these people.
Right.
So they fall right back down into the needs category. Bad. So yeah, that's a huge
deal. And think about what that does to mentality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you'll see more of that.
Mm. Yeah. Fix it. This is you're fixing it. But this
I mean
yeah.
we're,
fix it.
No, we're experimenting, man. We're trying to catalyze something, right?
Here's the thing that I want you to address this. Because I battle it in this conversation and in relationships, and in new relationships a lot, is narrative, right? Is Northeast Oklahoma City Renaissance. And you're doing all these things, but there is a narrative, especially when it comes to people that want to invest and people that want to move here. They got this idea
yep.
of Northeast Oklahoma City. And some of that idea I mean, the truth happens, right? Mm-hmm. The, I mean, things do happen. That's the truth. But the facts that create that truth is not necessarily talked about when they talk about the thing that happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
So in one of your places over at Kindred Spirits, which is one of my favorite spots, is you had an unfortunate incident over the summer. And I like you kind of just address the narrative that we battle even when these negative things do happen.
Yeah. So when you have decades of disinvestment, deterioration and blight, and you have decades of, underemployment, your communities, your community is more susceptible to drug trafficking and, things of that nature that, men and women felt like they had to do in order to make ends meet for their family, then like certain types of behaviors and activities are going to, like a certain level of violence and things of that would happen. Right. And so, and the same thing in Little Rock, I told you about this documentary that, that we had to overcome. And so when you have a short term kind of legacy of that, it's hard to move past it. But the same way that the city of Oklahoma City has worked so hard to like overcome its stigma and its own renaissance by pulling itself up by its bootstrap, I think that's the responsibility we've taken on as well. And it started by casting a new vision, and like investing, you know what I'm saying? So like investing your life, your family's life, you know what I'm saying? Right. When you come live here. And so like, I think who's that? I don't know. It was a great philosopher said, like, we got to be the change. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We want to see. I think there's that. And also I would say like to speak directly to the perception piece, it's not 1993. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, and so like, it's weird. Like Northeast Oklahoma City is far, has far like surpassed or beyond what it was then. And so anyone who still holds on to that perception, it is a challenge, right? To change their minds, but it's probably not going to be words that's going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I think we're going to have to show it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, the thing that it's not more violent than any other part of the city. Yeah, but it's just people just need to recognize if you were to start putting check marks of homicide and shooting and all that kind of stuff, if you just started doing your homework, you would see that it's not, that they're everywhere.
Correct. And so, you know, when you don't have wealth, political influence, you know what I'm saying? Just influence at high levels, then you don't maybe have the foresight or the relationships to change stories. You know what I'm saying? to manage That's narratives good. Before they get out there. Like there are places in like the epicenter of our city's commerce that have had killings. You know what I'm saying? That for some reason don't get the same type of attention that one would have in Northeast Oklahoma City, right? And that's like, there are reasons why that happens. You know what I'm saying? And so like that, I think that's a big part of the narrative, right? And so when you have people who care enough, like a JB or us who care enough to say, hey, I'm gonna respond I don't wanna say redirect, but you know, in response to this, people need to also know like this is not what it is. Like, this is an aberration now. You know what I'm saying? Don't look at us like Beirut. You know what I'm saying?
The fear that happens, that people say, I mean, this hasn't happened recently, but I remember coming to a community event and saying, you know, meet me at this community event. I'm running late. And this friend of mine from Northwest Oklahoma City, part of Oklahoma City, grew up in Oklahoma City, But they're going to meet me at this event in Northeast Oklahoma City. And I said, just go on in. I'll meet you there in a minute. I'm running late. And they go, I'm going to wait in the car till you get here. That fear comes from only one thing, right? Because it's not coming from the numbers and the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from not having a relationship at all. Like, if you knew the people that I mm-hmm. just asked you to meet, there is no way you'd wait in your car.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be greeting me at the door if you knew. So yeah. It's the unknowing of the community that I believe helps thrive a negative narrative that's not really true.
Yeah, I'd say that. And then, you know, you want to add on just kind of propaganda around, black people, right? In communities like ours and, you know, just kind of the expectations that other communities might have about how people behave based on, you know, how they look or dress or carry themselves. So, you know, you have that as well.
Yep. Yep. Let's talk about impact. Man, you're having a massive impact. I saw impact. I think we met with some eighth graders or seventh graders. You were working into like an after school program maybe or something.
Yeah, that might have been my role with Gear Up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think so. You've expanded that impact quite a bit. Let's talk about some outcomes that you're seeing right now for yourself, because it's I know you don't really look back, all that kind of stuff, but we got to look at some positive outcomes that you're having.
It's interesting. You said you saw me working with eighth graders, and now, you know, I own a restaurant and bar. Now I'll see some of those cats come in, and I'm like, I gotta go.
You are not old enough to be here.
I've seen yes. one that you work with yes. up there. Yeah. I'm like, oh Lord, am I this old now?
Yes. I'm gonna confirm that. Yes, you are.
But, you know, I'm really excited about the outcomes around our capacity building efforts. So like Placekeepers, we're at our fifth cohort, right? And so, you know, we got 5 to 7 folks coming out. You know, that's at least 25 more people that have like this that are looking at real estate development through this lens, that are evaluating, you know, properties, that are, you know, maybe pulling the trigger, that may be partnering, you know what I'm saying, this, that, and the third. And we're continuing to do that and adding in other, you know, layers to help them gain experience and really to, you know, to encourage them to get going. So I'm encouraged by that. I'm excited about the Oklahoma City Minority Founder Accelerator. We will serve at least 40 founders by the end of next year. And that's with the funding that we receive from the Alliance for Economic Development. But we have, you know, the potential for other philanthropy to come in that allow us to broaden, you know, our service capacity. And then, you know, I'm really excited about next year. We're going to be launching a revolving loan fund. Mm. That will be, I'm not sure what products we'll carry, because we got to hire somebody who's going to come up with that. but I know that they're going to, in ways, have products that could support our Placekeepers and our OMFA founders. And that we intend to lead to the creation of a community development financed institution, which would be huge, right? Because we're really able to address that access to capital issue, you know, by bridging that. And so, you know, you look at that, and then you really look at just kind of the ecosystem piece that we're talking about. You know, I think we're at the very early stages of something special. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I think, you know, and I'm excited about that. Like, we really have goals around what Northeast Oklahoma City looks like in 2050. And, you know, we want to recreate Deep Deuce by then, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's exciting to be planting those seeds, right? Yeah. That
2050,
that's extremely exciting.
Man, I love that long range view of things. That's Man, that's good vision. I'm glad you're in the seat. You're a phenomenal leader, and I love to be along for the ride. I'm watching it before my eyes. I remember when you were working with eighth graders, and now I'm sitting with you having a drink at the bar as we discuss the growth of the community that I grew up in. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, man. Shout out to you and the work you've been doing, man. You were doing this work before I got here, so shout out to you, man.
Yeah, but thanks for picking it up and doing what I can't do with it, right? I'm a people person, but you're actually doing some of the real work, like the investment piece, right? I like to energize people and get them involved and send them your way, and you do phenomenal work with it. I can't think about how many conversations where your name comes up in rooms that I can't even believe that I'm in. Your name comes up, and I'm able to affirm what they're already saying about you, and said, "Yeah, that's my guy."
I appreciate like how that works, man. That's how we gotta do.
That's my guy.
Hey, I forgot one thing that I'm really excited about, and you just reminded me of it. I'm excited about the future leadership and the people that are that are coming behind me and continuing to pour into.
I need to meet these folks, man. Yeah. I need to meet them if I don't know them already. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you probably met DeAndre Martin.
I have.
Yeah. Shout out. That's one of the main ones. But we're now working with Red River. What is it? Red River Community Corps to have our own AmeriCorps service members. We're gonna be developing them as they serve for Northeast Renaissance and plugging them into the, into the movement. And so I'm really excited about the prospects of that for sure.
And what I'll say to that is, as we've worked with young people over the years, a core theme that I feel like hasn't changed is young people's desires to impact their community.
Right.
Okay. And you don't always hear that in other communities. That was something that, when I was able to work in schools on the East Side and, all of that, was something that I, my antenna went up to, right? Is like the number of young people were like, man, obviously I want to make money, right? It's like making money, but it's also, I want to give back. I want to have an impact. And so I think what I see you guys and the work you're doing is there also needs to be an avenue for students to be able to do that, right? And so you're creating these opportunities for these young people to get practice reps, to be able to kind of flex that muscle of, hey, how do you want to show up in the community, right? Yeah. Like, I know you want to do a lot of things, but maybe let's find a focus for the season and kind of learn about this. That's super important for young people, as well as I hear in kind of the business accelerator and incubator that you're doing is like, I feel like it's disproportionate on the number of founders who say, yes, I want to do business, but I want to impact my community while doing it, right? Yeah. So I even, comes to mind maybe like a food truck that says, hey, once a month we actually go serve the homeless, right? It's like, y'all are taking profit, it's like from your company in the early days, right? Yeah. When money is so needed, right? And you are so invested in the people of your community and seeing people not hurt and in helping them take another step, that we see that with a multiple businesses. Mm-hmm. And I got to come to your pitch night with some of the businesses who are pitching their ideas and pitch decks, and just the event was phenomenal. But the thing I hear throughout that is almost every single one of those businesses, like, yeah, we're doing business, but we want to impact the community.
For sure. And we also talk a great deal about connectedness and like our cohorts finding a way to do business together. Mm-hmm. Right. Because that's how we just envision circular economy. Right. Yeah. But to your point earlier with the young folks, I really want to see us in the future lean more into those components, because what I still find is I think that age group knows less about what's happening in the future of Northeast Oklahoma City than most. Mm. Right. And so the more they know about it, the more they know they have a place.
Yeah. And I want them to recognize that's big, because I want them to recognize opportunity. I have to stop and say, look, this is happening. This is happening. And so you don't even recognize the opportunity that's before you because you don't know what's going on, right? Yeah. You don't know what the plans are and that kind of thing. And so that's a big piece for sure.
They need to be the target audience of somebody. You know what I'm saying? And so why not us?
I love that.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
I don't know how you wrap up any.
I just have more. That. I have more questions. I mean, are we done?
Yeah. This is the time. I mean, you want to do part two? Yeah, real quick?
When I see him, we're like, there's stuff going on, so we don't really get to have these kind of conversations much anymore. So I'm excited. I'm geeked up right now.
Hey, look, you know, I'm willing to answer whatever you got, man, while I'm here. But you know, I understand you got to wrap
catch
up.
You. Yeah, I'm gonna catch you.
Yeah.
So we can end it there. Part two after.
At Kindred Spirits.
Yep. And I'll leave it with why not us. Is what you said to kind of wrap up our time. And so that's what we have today. Dr. Quentin Hughes, we appreciate you being on the pod today.
Thank you so much.
We loved having the conversation. I know this is just kind of a jumping point for some people who are just kind of unpacking some of these things. So I think they'll have a lot to Google and research and kind of unpack for themselves. But I really appreciate you sharing some of your knowledge and insight and the work that you are doing to push Northeast Oklahoma City forward, as well as Oklahoma City and even the state. So
what day am I meeting you at Kindred Spirit? It's Thursday through Sunday, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Come through. I need to brush up on our hours of operation.
I just know Thursday through Sunday.
Thursday through Sunday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. That's perfect. Yeah. So as always, seeking common ground for the common good. I'm Waylon Cubitt.
And I'm Taylor Dell.
And this is the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. For more episodes, subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review. Please share the show with your friends and family. It really helps us to get the conversation out to more people. This podcast is a production of United Voice Oklahoma, one of the initiatives of the Stronger Together movement, and is produced by OKC Good. This current season is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund.